very fanfic friendly, but there's much more strict readings of canon, which is common in a lot of series today. Notables include Star Wars, Harry Potter, and to be honest, this is actually really interesting with the furry fandom, because the furry fandom is not actually attached to a single IP. So canonicity in a lot of furry properties is extremely flexible, and that's, I think, they're one of the strengths of the furry fandom.
Yeah, like, we don't have, like, a full set or series that you can point to, but believe me, we've got inspiration. We are everywhere. Yes? Oh, there's the microphone. Hi! Oh, am I not working?
It might not be.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. Where's the button here? This is my first time doing this in person, so bear with me.
Of course.
All right, so let's eventually go over, since the furry fan doesn't necessarily have a canon, per se, there were things that we kind of adopt as canon. So we're going to go way back to the 1950s to the 1930s. They were usually referred to as funny animals. Like, the early furry fandom wasn't even called furry. It was just called funny animals. And some of the earliest ones is this little cat guy right here. His name was Felix. And he was a lucky cat who had a little bag that he just pulled stuff out of. It was like a Deus Ex Machina, but it was more like Deus Ex item, whatever he needed.
Animals were a very popular subject in early cartoons because anthropomorphizing animals took a lot of the seriousness out of what would happen. Cartoon violence has been a recurring topic in pop culture over the years, and the making characters animals, because it's something that doesn't exist, has always been a way to tone down the seriousness of such things. This is, in my opinion, elemental to the origin of the furry fandom, because it allows us to act out, like, all sorts of world building, all sorts of fantasies. Like, you can imagine where that goes. But we're continuing with the animation realm of things.
Right, which that actually plays into how furry has evolved over time. Because we started in the early funny animals, like, this wavy little arm was with, like, the rubber hose animation. But then as we progress through history, we get a more serious approach. I mean, let's say if you take a Mickey Mouse cartoon like Steamboat Willie and then compare it to, say, The Lion King, they're telling very, very different stories. I mean, think of the scene with Scar and Mufasa, and tell me, as a kid, if you're like 5 years old and you didn't know what was going on and you never read Hamlet or any of those stories, I think you'd be kind of upset. That's kind of graphic.
Hamlet is really not for kids. The Lion King is great for kids.
Yep. But still gives you that trauma. Yay. All right. Oh, yeah, I also feel old. Well, the Disney
canon. I don't.
Oh, sure you. So the Disney canon was usually considered a good furry canon, like for a basis. But you can point to The Lion King and say, oh, that's furry. You can point to Disney's Robin Hood and say, oh, that's furry. But we never really have anything that we can point to and say, that is who we are. Until now. Behold, the Netflix starter pack. The Triforce of the furry fandom.
This is the revolution, the streaming masterpiece, which has led us to our modern era of art.
Which we have Ajit Suko, All About Office Work, and Fuzzy Little Animals, and Death Metal. Then we got BNA. Now, the differences between these two is Ajit Suko, for a Japanese audience, for an anime standpoint, really focuses on the Japanese struggles of office work. But believe me, it's very relatable to Americans.
Very relatable. I don't know Japanese culture. What does BNA stand for?
So BNA is Brand New Animal. That's the second one. Now this one is definitely more of your traditional humans transform to animals and basically create their own society. So definitely very furry. But it's more on like a traditional sense. Like Agrid Suko's more on the real life end, while BNA is more on the fantastic sci-fi end. And then we got something that's actually in the middle with Beastars. And I mean, just look at these three. Get in the van. We're gonna watch some Netflix furries. So, oh, also, ladies in the audience, you just have to admit, Legoshi is hot. Let's all be real here. That's just a thing.
He is big.
And also, it is definitely the cooler Zootopia. I even put glasses on Legoshi just to make it clear he is the cooler one.
My God, Legoshi wins it for me.
Yep. So now we're going to step more into what Beastars is as a literary and thematic item.
If you allow me to editorialize your corner, I would like to actually draw attention to DNA first. Like what you said about DNA.
Sure. Let's talk about DNA.
So, one of the core plot points of DNA is not everybody's a furry if they own a brand new animal. Mm-hmm. In fact, very few people are furries. This is actually a socially sanctioned status to be a furry. If you take a look at everyone around you in the furry family, a lot of us are queer. A lot of us are minorities. The allegory is that we have made our own space to be ourselves, and we will stand strong with each other no matter what everyone else thinks of us. That's allegory.
Yep. So that takes the allegory. Well, as he takes care of the allegory, I'm going to get into the parallel. So, as allegory was explained, and this is just more of like the definitionary term, but parallel, well, just to pull it straight from the book, a person or thing that is similar to or analogous to another. So, you got, say, a flower that's blue over here, and you got a flower that's red over here. The parallel will be they're both flowers, they're both mirror images, but there's differences enough that you can tell it's definitely not the same. But it's definitely similar. So when you bring these two concepts together, from a literary standpoint, it can take character problems that we might face from day to day, add a little fantasy flair to it, a little bit of charm, a little bit of pizzazz, that you can pick out the problems, but they're shaped in a very different way to suit that universe, but it is still incredibly relatable. As you see this little sheep right here? He's cute. Actually, in case you can't read it from all the way over there, because my eyesight's bad, says, man, why do I have to put up with this cutesy face again when I really just want to run around and scream? Moogie is actually a character from a side series called Beast Complex, where this little boy, he is forced from a societal standpoint to be all the, cutesy Steve, and like dance around and like everything's hunky-dory. He is super into death metal. He is super goth. He is super, I don't want to deal with the world. Go, everybody else, go away.
I'd like to call back to what I said earlier about funny animals being a way to digest more serious things with something cute. This is the natural evolution of such a thing. It allows us to have perhaps cultural dialogue about issues like racism, like queerphobia, in ways that don't map directly onto real world problems. There's no obvious connections, but it allows us to have a dialogue with things we can kind of have a basis in without directly referencing our own prejudices first.
You are absolutely right. You got a gold star after this. Thank you so much for being here. We got to appreciate the man. All right. Oh, so now we're going to be talking more as just furry as a genre. So furry, in addition to being a style or an art choice, many people, and like say Japanese culture, even count it as a genre due to the sheer amount of medium. What's interesting about furry is you can have something be a sci-fi, something be a fantasy, heck, something maybe even a sports series. It can still be furry, but it can all be grouped and furry because it's so stylized, people can attribute it even to an actual genre.
But why is that, Koiter?
Why is it because I would...
Beastars, do I get the same out of Beastars as I would say out of Lucky Star? Or Madoka Magica?
You can,
both anime, clearly.
You can actually get that same kind of feeling because of how in-depth it is, and probably even stronger due to the fact that it is a self-contained world that is so different from ours, but it's so alike. It's like looking through like a... You know when you walk into a carnival and they've got all these mirrors and you look at yourself like you might be really, really short or really, really tall. It's kind of like that, but you're looking at it so many different angles. It could be like even almost a sensory overload, but it comes together that you still see it as like one cohesive work. So actually, let's actually take a step back when we went over the history, because the first, you know, furry as a genre has been here for a long time. Let's go back to Aesop's Fables, which is actually the theme for Anthrocon 2022. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yes, and I am mad because I wanted that badge. That's why I wasn't able to make it. We're starting with Aesop's Fables. Then we got Grimm's Fairy Tales. Now, I do not like Grimm. He gives wolves a bad name. Just remember that. Grimm is not a fun guy. But some of the stuff that's not animals is actually really interesting. All right, so the beginnings of furry animation was more slapstick-oriented with the rubber hose animation style because it was meant to be more comedical, more lighthearted. But remember, the evolution would change.
I'd like to call back to the violence. We can digest slapstick. It is violence.
Oh, yeah, very violent. People get beheaded, skeletons roaming around the place, Mickey getting...
But it's funny because cute little rubber hosey.
Oh, yeah, so it really doesn't matter. And, oh, I remember there was actually an episode of Betty Boop with the mascot, which was this little dog. I don't remember the name off the top of my head. And there was actually a cult episode where he was just slapped senseless until he joined this makeshift cult, which Betty Boop was a part of. It was a really, really weird episode. Definitely check and watch. And search it, like the Betty Boop cult episode. But
I'll just check that out.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So now we did the slapstick, but then eventually over time it went to return to allegory because they would take some of the older literary works, which focused more on the allegorious parallels of furry-related works and then animate them. So how many of you have seen Animal Farm? You know how graphic that can be. You should know. Oh, Watership Down. All right, how many of you are familiar with that one?
Another fantastic allegory.
Yes, this is like the classic furry works. The ones that you can actually get credit for reading a book in like grade school.
Furries help kids digest Stalinism.
So, yep, so the neo-allegory, I add this as a subsection because recently, like say I'd say start in the 80s, it starts to take that allegory and then apply it more to our world. It's not necessarily old because it's still teaching us the same things, but it's new because it applies to the problems that we are facing now to the present day. Like, you can look back to the Animal Farm and the Watership Down. That could apply to any time. It is a timeless work. But since we didn't live in that time period, we wouldn't necessarily understand the full aspect of how it affected society. Neo-allegory, stuff that's coming out right now, like right this second, but we understand. We know what's going on. And those stories reflect our current problems. So eventually it'll be back to regular allegory, but for now, it is new to us because these are the problems that we are facing today. And I'm gonna use Zootopia, but here's the thing. I know I put it in neo-allegory. What's a shame is that's actually a timeless problem that we're having really big issues with. I could say the word, but I don't feel like saying it. I think all of you would know it, but it's a pretty good example of what I mean by facing the problems that we're encountering now. All right, hit the button.
Quarter.
Oh,
Zootopia ACAB.
ACAB. Can you clarify ACAB?
All cops are... You finished last
week. No, I wouldn't say that.
Okay, no worries.
I wouldn't. Oh, and then we got B-stars. But I also want to touch on how anime has treated the furry genre. So we know in Western cultures, we like using animal characters to teach us lessons. Anime kind of does the same thing, but just different. And I'm just gonna show, like, furry characters are, usually they're splashed in. They're, like, if you take a look at all the furry stuff in Japan and the furry stuff in the Western cultures, I'm sorry, Western cultures, we got this down. We have so much of it. We're actually spoiled. Look at how many furry conventions are in the States versus Japan. Just take that comparison. It's definitely there.
We're over here reinventing popular art.
Yep. Though many people would attribute as to why anime just splashes furry characters in, like I have so many isekais that I would love to read. I just need a filter. All right, isekais with furry and more than just one character, that list shrinks because of this one trope. Most writers are human. That is a sad fact that we have to face. Because if we're human as writers, what do you think we're going to write about?
You're gonna write about us?
Exactly! So, usually, Japanese culture, they just like, oh, we're human? Alright, we'll write a story about humans. Oh, monsters? Furries? Oh, yeah, they'll just be regular monsters. Unless I want to do some twisty, new thing with it.
Well, Porter, if you ask me, anime is great and all, but in the way nature has made the crab so many times, I think Japanese animators have also made the human so many times.
That is true.
The thing I like about furry anime is that it allows us to branch out. Like, Agretsuko looks nothing like Beastars.
Oh, no.
DNA looks absolutely nothing like...
They are so far different, but that's what we appreciate, because even though it's in the furry drama, it looks different and it's refreshing to the eyes. You don't normally see it. And that's what makes it great. So just to go over some older stuff, if you're interested in looking up some history, Temple of the White Lion. It's their version of the Lion King, but a lot longer and more bloody. That is as simple as that. And also, he is darn cute. Now, this one, when I was doing my research, there was very little on this, but there was a series called The Fables of the Green Forest. Think of that as our version of, say, Canterbury Tales, but with furries. That's the best way to describe it. Oh, yes, my personal favorite, Sherlock Hound. I love the history of this series. I'm going to show you the cover art. I'm not going to talk about it right now.
Let's show the cover art.
Oh, we are going to get to that.
It's Hayao Miyazaki's early Awkward Days. Which
yes, and it's just so stylized. We're going to be talking about that on a very important slide coming up, but I just want to highlight that because Sherlock Hound is one of my all-time favorites, besides Beastars, by the way. Beastars, I love you. Okay, come on, press the button.
Would you like me to press it?
Oh, this is the next slide is going to be important because for Japanese audiences, these two words make the difference between furry and definitely not furry, but they try to be. They're posers.
Yeah, you're the furry and the poser here.
Yep. So Kimono Mimi is human animal, or human with animal ears and tail. All they got is this. This right here. I know normally you have ears and a tail, but no. You are the Kimono Mimi. I'm the real thing. I'm the kimono. I'm the actual furry. Come on, button. Press. Oh, there's Kemba the White Lion. I know this picture is not as big, but there he is. Okay, here is the example. Spice and Wolf. You see the cute anime girl that is so signature in all those anime and isekais you read. Just human. Got tail, got ears, that's it. That's all you need. Japan audiences love this. I don't. I'm sorry.
Did she have human ears under that hair cover?
Shush. No, don't shush. Keep talking. I like you up here. Don't go away. I need help. All right, and then, of course, Sherlock Hound. That is kimono. That is full-on furry and dog people, but they're British, and that makes it better. I know the British have got problems, but this is more like the idealized British that they wish they were actually were kind of British. So, an interesting story, Sherlock Hound himself would have been a bloodhound, but at the time, people really loved Queen Elizabeth corgis. They're like, okay, we're going to make Sherlock Hound a corgi, I guess.
Who doesn't love corgis?
I know. They're so darn cute, aren't they? So
we got corgis in the audience. Hey,
we see you. We see you. You better watch Sherlock Hound. It is on Blu-ray.
Who doesn't want to see Sherlock Holmes?
I know. Oh, wait, actually, going back to the series, I know I went to that slide, but just some history. There was a certain time period where French animators and Japanese animators would get together on projects, and that collaboration has lasted even to the current day. So Sherlock Hound was considered one of those earlier works that they collaborated on, and it was Miyazaki's earlier work, and the style just shines through. It's such a good series. And just so you know, some more recent stuff that they worked on, any of you familiar with Totally Spies? That's one of them.
We were all corrupted by
Totally Spies. Oh, absolutely. That was like, we learned a lot of lessons from that one. Not ones they teach us in school. All right, so I want to now pivot to the beginning of Beastars and the concept of OVA. OVA, it's short for a certain part that means beginning. Like, oh, egg. That's the best way to say it.
It's Latin, in fact.
Oh, really? Yeah. What's the Latin term for?
Ovum.
Ooh.
OVA is plural.
Oh, okay.
It's the origin.
So Beast Complex was written by Power Itagaki, which we will be talking about her. We stan Power Itagaki, and I'm going to explain why. She is such... I love that author. She ate everything about her. We're going to get to her. So the timetable they released, or Power released chapters 1 through 4 in November of 2016, or March through November. It was kind of serialized. Then each chapter, like every few years, chapter 5 was in 2017 and chapter 6 was in 2019. There's a huge gap in there because during that time, she was also working on the other project, the big one, Beastars. Because Beast Complex was like her little baby, like to introduce us to the world of Beastars. Well, Beastars is the everything in the kitchen sink. And Beast Complex is a collection of short stories, and there's more to be released, people. Believe me, these shorts, they do not pull punches. They are phenomenal and fantastic. This is some of her best writing. Actually, if she turned Beastars into a Beast Complex and that's all we got, I'd be very happy. Beastars is more like the whole cake. Well, Beast Complex is the icing, but it's one of those things that you kind of eat the icing first because it's just so sweet.
The best things in life require patience, my friends.
And this is actually the cover to the first Beast Complex, where it was the wolf and the camel. It was a very good short, but it's actually not my favorite, but we're going to get into that. Oh, we also wanted to talk, since we've established that Beast Complex was her first work, to kind of introduce us to the world of Beastars. She combines three things, the style, the structure, and the world building, combines them all, mixes them all up, and then gives us an amazing stew. So we're going to start with the style and the art. Well, first off, it's anthropomorphic. I don't think I'd be talking about this at a furry convention if it wasn't.
It's not only anthropomorphic, folded, but you can recognize Beastars art anywhere.
It is so stylized.
Her eyebrows, man.
Yes, those eyebrows. And the way the eyes are in certain panels, which we're going to actually talk about that art style. That is a very interesting one.
We'll show you more examples.
Oh, definitely. But I also want to highlight, with Power's earlier work, especially with Beast Complex and the early chapters of Beastars, if you follow her throughout that, the first earlier work started as more of like a sketch, but it also brought up the feeling, while it eventually became more polished over time. Like, she's first got the sketch, then she releases more of a structure and how to do the art. And now when you get to those final books of Beastars and the ones that are releasing today, it is incredibly polished. It really shows the evolution as an artist and as a producer that Power has gone through so much through. It's amazing just watching this artist just blossom into where she is now.
Yes. What modes of distribution is Beast Complex in?
So originally it was, all right, what was that one serialized series?
Because we know there's manga books.
Right. Shōjin Jump. So Shōjin Jump, so Beast Complex is unique because initially she wanted, or Beast Complex and Beastars, she wanted to do a shōjin, which her work isn't exactly a shōnen manga. And a shōnen manga, if you don't know the definition of that Japanese terms, it really is a stylized work that is meant to focus on fighting. Think Dragon Ball Z. That is like the poster child of all shōnen. And oh wait, I heard a hand go up. Yeah? Oh yes, the young men part. Yep. That is also true.
Like I said, shōnen is usually aimed towards young boys to like old teenage men, teenage boys. So it's more, that's why it's aimed towards fighting a lot.
That is also true. So speaking of young boys like fighting, that's usually what you get. But Beastars is unique because it's actually written by a woman. And she has a completely different perspective on that. And also, young boys love this series. We're going to get into that. So for the structure, I'm actually going to go over just a quick summary of the chapters of Beast Complex. And the structure is she would take two characters in her world, write a short story about them, the problem that they're encountering, and how they resolve it on an individual level, which could then be used as an example for a larger level. Like the first one, the lion and the bat. Lion befriends a bat. Bat's afraid to speak to lion because, a lion ate my parents. And the lion's like, uh-oh, how do I fix this? And over time, the lion becomes friends with the bat. The bat does move because he does acknowledge it still hurts, but he does respect that the lion made an effort and tried to resolve what the issue was. Like, it wasn't just I'm sorry, one of my species did that to your parents. Instead, the lion actually took efforts to try to make them more comfortable in the world.
This injustice is part of getting off these work is much more allegorical because we don't really have a problem with people eating people in our world, thank goodness. But it's a symbol of both injustice and our social relations to each other, how power and balance work.
That is perfect. Thank you for being here. Okay, next one, the camel and the wolf. This one, I'm not going to go too far into, but it definitely shows more of a dynamic between how males and females treat each other in the dating course and what they prioritize. The next one, The Crocodile and the Deer, is the funniest. It's about a cooking show with a crocodile and a deer. And it becomes a form of, what's the name of that one chef that criticizes all those, when they try to like save the bar?
Gordon the Man.
Yeah, it becomes that. I love that part. The Fox and the Chameleon is actually my favorite, because I'm a sucker for romance, not going to lie. I can't count how many isekais I read of the girl that gets hit by bus, gets transported into her favorite novel as the villainess, and then she has to make sure she saves her behind, and ends up falling for the male leads that the real villainess just couldn't get attached to. Yeah, it's like that, but the fact that The Fox and the Chameleon really focuses on like introvert slash extrovert relationships, personal favorite, muy bien. And then, of course, the world building. All these stories are in the same world. They all follow specific rules, like predators do have the urge to eat prey. This is a world populated by animals. They are all anthropomorphic. There are no monkeys because humans didn't get into that world. That is actually a specific rule, because Stevens Power actually did this in one of her interviews. If she put a monkey in there, people would say, oh, that's the smartest animal. They'll eventually get human. She's like, nope, they're not going to exist in this world because I want to be consistent. And since it's the world related by animals, with people aren't, it's definitely easily relatable and understandable. Oh, I want to add this bonus. In Chapter 6 of Beast Complex, the author's thoughts on a certain great castle in a certain great country. This is around the time Zootopia came out. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. You tell me what that means.
Mouse.
So I'm also going to put, these are some pictures. Starting from the top is from one of the earliest chapters with a tiger. And if you look also at the camel, those are like some of like the first three chapters. And then if you look on the right, that's later on. So you'll see like the more sketch style compared to the more polished style and how that style evolved. The chameleon right there, from my favorite, that's more like the in-between from the trying to like polishing it, while this boy here, that Komodo dragon there, that is my all-time favorite character in Beastars, that's her polished work, and that it looks stunning from that. Wait, I went back, and you go forward. Here's the button. There we go. And now we're going to talk about the amazing, the glorious Paru Itagaki. She is an honorary furry. She has not embraced the furry title, but for all sense and purposes, as soon as you see her, you'll be like, oh yeah, she's a furry. There she is!
The chicken lady.
Yep. She never goes in public without that mask because social anxiety, which is definitely relatable in this community. Not gonna lie. Heck, I'm actually doing this panel in fursuit now. None of you know who I look like.
Right here.
So yes, she has a fursuit yet. Yes, she wears it in public. Yes, she uses her fursuit head to help with the insecurity dealing with large groups. Yes, her persona is a chicken, which is so unique in this fandom.
We got any chickens in here?
Any chickens?
I'll confess something. My very first persona was a chicken. So.
Really? You did not say this.
Hey, or this.
Wow, you have a lot more in common with this series than I imagined.
I might.
Huh. Oh, yes. This is important. She did a self-insert of herself in her own series with her own persona. How relatable is that? We stand this lady. Oh, also, before I go and talk more about her title and what she's accomplished, it's kind of small, but in her documentary, which I watched, I totally recommend you do, she said this, "I think my first crush was Scar from The Lion King." You tell me, if that's not furry, I don't know what is. So, a mangaka, pardon my pronunciation, I am tired, and I was never good with pronunciation. Actually, you play Magic the Gathering with me, I stink at those names, they always point me out on. Honorary mangaka is a comic artist that breaks into the industry without becoming an assistant first. This is actually very rare, because normally in the industry, you become an assistant for someone who's like has a really popular manga, like you do like the shadowing, the shading, and all those for the pages. She did it on her own. She didn't become an assistant. She just went to do her own thing and just broke into the industry. And I'm like, so I'm here. I'm ready. See my work? Yeah, I'm a mangaka. This is a very, very rare and honorary title. Like, that's a big deal. Oh, but I do think she had some help, but what's interesting here is, so she is the daughter of another manga artist called Sekuki, Keisuke Itagaki, once again, part of my pronunciation. So he wrote Baki the Grappler. Does anybody know Baki the Grappler? Yeah, it's a pretty popular one. Like, super popular. This is his daughter. Yeah. Bet you didn't know that. And even though she was his daughter, he didn't really teach her that much. She kind of did it on her own. She kind of read all the ones on her dad's shelf and was like, kind of want to do that, but I want to do something different. But she definitely got some inspiration. If you look at some of those characters, I mean, some of those muscles, yep, I can see the inspiration there if you read those series.
Just goes to show you, if you can get yourself out there, you can succeed without doing normal track.
So this is where I'm actually going to end talking about her, because even though I watched her documentary, she is a very private person, and we're going to respect that privacy. So now this is important. Standing means you respect them, you care about them, you appreciate their work, but you don't be a creep about it.
But Collier,
yeah?
Stan is literally a contraction of stalker or fan.
Yeah, but it's the nicer one.
It's ironic, I guess.
I know, it's ironic, but Stanning is the nicer one. You want to stan, you don't want to be a...
You don't want to be a stalker fan.
Exactly. Oh, also, her favorite Beastars character is Gohan. So for those that have read Baki the Grappler, and knows what his style is, why do you think Gohan would be your first favorite character, if you know it?
Gohan is the panda that kidnaps the Goshi midway through and gets him over his meat addiction.
Yep, and he's got muscles from all that bamboo. Yes?
I would like to say for the record that Legoshi's English voice actors has said that his crap ship is Legoshi and Gohan. He admitted this.
Yep, that is correct. Now we're going to finally talk about the manga, which is what you're here to listen about. First off, we're just going to go over some more of the boring information, dry stuff, before we get into the good stuff. Chapter 1, it was 2016. Do you feel old yet? The last chapter was in 2020. Now, we don't have this chapter yet. So there's a thing called fan translations where they would take the work, they would translate it to English ahead of time before the big corporations and then release it to us. There's a lot of legal stuff involved in that. I'm not going to get into that, but we are going to touch on it. So put just a thumbtack on that.
There's never a problem with English translation.
Oh, yeah, there's never a problem. Yeah, that's a big deal. And it was released chapter by chapter through Akita Shoten's Shonen Manga. And we're going to put a thumbtack on that, too, because there's a certain side story involving a certain self-insert character that alludes to this. And it's hysterical. And it was originally released... Ah, this is it. So originally, Beastars was released on Wednesdays, because this was kind of like a daily serial thing. And without Paru knowing, because of how popular this was, they switched it from Wednesday to Saturday, the main issue, without telling her. So tell me, if you're a creator doing a comic, and you open up your comic on Wednesday, expecting to find yours, you don't see it, what goes through your mind?
Absolute horror.
Yep. Oh, now, I'm just going to summarize this. Beastars main plot. Zootopia saw a world where predators are inclined to eat prey, if you don't know this already. Oh, yes, I'm going to add this. So, one of my favorite childhood shows was watching That's Entertainment. And in this movie, they summarize all musicals like this. Boy meets girl. Boy loses girl. Boy sings song. Boy gets girl back. In Beastars, it's wolf meets girl, wolf about to eat girl, wolf trains to respect girl, wolf works to get girl back.
Wolf meets boy, though.
Oh, also, now we gotta have some fun here. Fan-translated comics are my bread and butter in this fandom for Beastars. And we're gonna start with our good boy here. I swear I'm not a furry, just because I like Beastars. Innocent weebs. Legoshi, just staring. Don't smile at me like that! You don't believe me, do you? And then Legoshi, smug face. Totally not a furry. Of course not. So now I'm just going to quickly summarize. Why do we love it? And if you know it, why do you love it? This would be the point. If I had more people here, we would talk about why we love Beastars. I basically, all these slides after this, I'm going to talk about why I love Beastars. But since you're one of the new folks that are helping me with this, why do you love Beastars?
Love Hoyter, actually. The point of allegory, actually, about really close to me here. I like Beastars for the same reason I like a lot of works that make me feel awkward and deal with a lot of social issues. I like Beastars because I can digest social issues, maybe even social issues that I relate to, in a way that I have my control over my experience. I think a lot of people like these kind of things because it allows them to digest something, their issues in ways that where they have control over their experience.
That is a really good answer. Oh, wait, real quick, what check time? What time is it?
Of course. Is 5:37.
Perfect, we're making good time. All right, sorry, I just wanted to do a quick check time because for me, I love it for so many different reasons. The art, the artist, the story, the fact that it's Anthro, the complex issues that it explains, just so much, but I'm gonna dive into that. Like, first for me, let's talk about the art. Expressions and art style. Put some memes here. I love this one with Legoshi. Mom said it's my turn to play the Xbox. And of course, we got the good Lion Boys with Legoshi and Lewis, just watching. Now, I wanted to point this out, because I had one friend who is such an expert on Beastars, he can pick out every single chapter all these expressions come from. Unfortunately, he is not here to show that off, because he is not feeling too good, but he didn't give me the cheat sheet, so I will not be able to wow you with that, but I want to take a moment to look at some of these expressions. Just focus on the eyes.
Corner, my dear friend, I am here, though, to make complaints. I do love this art style, but what doesn't do it for me is the animal versions of human hands and human feet.
Okay, yeah. You know what? That is a fair complaint.
I see dots.
But
they can pause.
That doesn't really bother me as much. But for someone who likes pause, I can understand that. But just look at these faces. Especially like the Haru just switching from surprise to anguish, and she's like, what the heck is going on? To Legoshi's little beady eyes, like, of course it's like this.
I love his dumb dog expression in the middle of the page there.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a wonderful one. And then my favorite character, well, besides Lizard Boy, which I'm not saying the name because it's just technically a spoiler, my other favorite character is Bill the Tiger. And this particular picture that Bess is from one, probably one of my other favorite shorts in the series, which I'm not going to spoil it because this is spoiler-free. But it is a wonderful little short story with Bill. Probably one of my favorites. Well, besides the one that's going to be coming up. All right, come on, press the button. So now, when I was doing my research into this and how she gets her ideas for the expressions and why us as Western audiences have gripped onto this, is because normally for Japanese artists, they grow up reading manga and watching animation, so then they would usually imitate or copy that kind of style. Haru didn't grow up like other girls. She grew up instead liking a lot of Western cartoons. She loved Looney Tunes. She loved Hanna-Barbera. And it came out in her work. Like, when I was reading Beastars, sometimes it's like, okay, I see the Japanese style, but some of it seemed familiar to me, and I didn't know why. Until I started to put some of the puzzles together. In this corner, we got Western animation. I want you to take a very close look at that coyote. As a coyote, this is total respect, because I love Wiley. And then also look at this expression of Sylvester. And then I want you to look at the manga examples. Like, you got the short, smaller eyes, and then the blushy anime girl who just tripped and got caught by her love and is starting blushing and is going through all those romantic feelings. And now, oh wait, let me go back here. I want you to just take it, I'm really going to pick out that coyote there. We're going to go back one.
Those very weird looking furries on the left.
Look at that Lewis stance right there. That is the exact same stance from Looney Tunes of Wile E. Coyote. She basically took the Looney Tunes animation style and Japanese animation style, put it in a blender, and came up with her own work. Which, that alone is fantastic. And you notice it. Like that smug Sylvester expression from that prior slide. You get some smug Legoshi there, like in the top right corner. It's like, it's there. She combined them both perfectly, and it is wonderful. Just wanted to throw that out there. And now we're going to go into one of my favorite characters, not my favorite, better reserved for a certain lizard boy and a tiger boy, but this one here, they're up there. We're going to go into Lego and her story. I'm taking the reins on this. Did you read this short story with Lego?
I didn't, but...
Oh, okay. All right. We're going to talk about this chicken here. Does that chicken look familiar? Does she? Audience? Does she? Yep. All right. So we're going to talk about Lego. The story of Lego. It's Power Rangers Persona and Beastars, if you haven't noticed. Love of her, now.
Quentin Tarantino tends to die in his own movies. She's not given too major a role.
I know, but it's still wonderful. So,
which is classic.
We're going to actually go back to that parallel versus allegory and how Legom relates to this. So she is a chicken. She loves her work, just like Paru. Their work is very different. Paru likes drawing things. Legom, she likes laying eggs. That is her work. She takes so much pride in her eggs, she runs every morning to make sure her eggs are the best quality. Like, she is an egg-making machine, but she wants to do it. She doesn't do it for no man. She doesn't do it to make money. She does it because she wants to lay those eggs and see the expression of the wolf boy next to her eat those eggs and be super satisfied.
She takes pride in her twisted role in this twisted society.
Yep. So the reason, one of like those loopholes in the thing is that eggs are considered protein, and in this world, they can't eat eggs as long as they're not fertilized because eggs aren't considered meat. Heck, even in this world, eggs aren't considered meat. I never understood that, but that's reality. So instead of predators eating meat, they use meat supplements and eggs. So basically the parallel, remember how I talked about those chapters moving from Wednesday to Saturday? Well, this chicken's eggs were always given out on Wednesday for those egg sandwiches that a certain wolf boy next to her likes eating. And then one day, the wolf boy's like, huh, these egg sandwiches, they don't taste right. And then this poor chicken has a mental breakdown, like, what's wrong with my eggs? Why doesn't he like them? Did I mess up? Until the shopkeeper's like, oh no, we just switched it to Saturday for selling your eggs because they're so popular. And then she is saved. I love that chicken. So now, we're going to talk about the main wolf boy. So another reason why I like this are the characters, like that chicken right there, but the characters are just so good. And we're going to now talk about wolf boy, like the wolf boy in front. Here, stand up and show off that wonderful cosplay.
Yeah.
Like that is just wonderful right there. So we're now going to talk about this wolf boy, this hopelessly romantic wolf boy. Just look at that picture. Look at that smolder.
Determined, lovable weirdo.
And his name is a fan translation error, which is already just a great start. So when I was reading it, which, not gonna lie, I did read the English translation before we finally got it in the States, it was translated by them as Lego Sheep. Since even Paru said, oh yeah, I named him after Bela Lugosi, the actor, because he was intimidating and I wanted my main character to be intimidating. Though, let's not gonna lie, just look at that face. Is that an intimidating, cute wolf boy face? Really?
I'm horrified.
I know, it's so terrifying. But actually, it should be translated as Lego Sheep. So for me, I'm always going to pronounce it as Legosi, but then when I watch the anime and they pronounce it right, Legoshi, I get so confused.
I came in from the anime, so I always pronounce it as Lego Sheep.
But in my mind, I keep saying Legosi, because that's how I've always read it.
But that's valid.
Yep, so it is another reason why I like this, is because you get to talk about these things, because of those little details that are just, Oh yeah, so in Japanese, it is pronounced with the she, which I can't stand as a original manga reader. And oh yes, Legoshi, he suffers from the big dumb, which
is
one of my favorite.
From the big dumb?
Oh yeah, I suffer from the big dumb.
Yeah, there
we go. I even joke with my significant other, oh, are you a moron of sexual, because I am just so big dumb. Oh, also, this is a note for me. He has the coolest grandpa in all of anime. Stand aside, that turtle guy from Dragon Ball. This is the best grandpa. Actually, the grandpa is nicknamed the Joseph Joestar of this series, if you're familiar with the Bazaar. Yep, I'm just going to end myself there because I don't want to. No. Oh, but he is also a sweet boy, and we must protect him. This boy gets in so much trouble, you just want to protect the poor boy. Oh yes, and he loves rabbits. And now it's meme time. You gotta love the memes just from the name alone. First they translate it and then they just make fun of it. He gets so much slack. I mean, we got Lego here. Lego. Oh, now actually, when I first saw this meme, I was going back to my Spanish classes and congregating all those different verbs. Oh, as, ah, amos, an. Is that bringing back some Spanish lessons over there? Yep. In this case, it's all with legosi, like legs, legsi, osi, legate. Did you expect a language lesson of legoshi in this panel? No. All right, also I love this one. There's manga, then there's anime, and the Netflix adaptation. But the problem is here, the anime is the Netflix adaptation. And then, of course, rabbit, because like, oh, she loves rabbits.
I think we all know the Netflix adaptation of Beastars is going to look like cats.
Oh, apps. Oh, no. 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 Oh, but fun fact, they did make a stage play of Beastars in Japan. They did.
How'd they do?
Actually, I loved it. I saw the trailers for it on YouTube, and I'm like, dang, that looks good.
Check it out.
Yep. So, keep in mind, the quality was like the actual Broadway cats, which that was Lua liked. Now, what we don't want is that stage show adaptation being adapted to the big screen instead of going to the back to the source material, and then we get Beastars cat version. But film. No, we don't want that. I'm just going to take that out of my memory. I'm not even going to think about that thought.
Wait, are you saying financial interests ruin art?
Oh, you don't say. Oh, actually, just want to highlight, we're going to be doing another panel called The Art of the Furry Visual Novel. That is later today, and we're actually going to be talking about that. Excited for that one?
I can't wait.
Oh, absolutely. We're going to talk. We're going to have a lot of fun with that one. So now we're going to talk about Angry Lewis. He is another one of my favorite characters. Actually, do you know Angry Lewis?
He is my favorite character.
Oh, really? I will let you talk about this. We'll also talk about his name, because for some reason, when you love something, we're going to learn everything about it. And just if you learn stuff about the name and it's cool, yes, that is worth learning about. Like his name. Oh, well, just quick fact, Angry Lewis is Beth Lewis. Isn't that right?
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. We always want this boy to be angry, because that's when he's at his best. Now, this is what he's named after. You want to pronounce that?
Louis Vuitton.
See, I'm horrible at pronunciation. I'm glad I asked you.
For the rest of the time, because I'm the anime nerd, I didn't come in for the manga, I call him Louis.
Yep, I just refer to him as Louis, but of course that's just English, American, dumb brain mind. Oh yeah, just to let you know how much these handbags are worth, try Googling it. Have fun with that. Just a used one. You're gonna, oh, also French Kings, but just looking at that handbag, I'm not gonna buy one of those handbags.
Louis is to France as Wilhelm is to Germany.
Yeah, that is actually a very good comparison right there. Oh, also, this was a fun fact that I learned in the documentary. On 8/15/2020, Power was gonna kill them all. I'm so glad she didn't.
I'd like to call back to our talk about candidacy. That is not canon, but could have been.
Yeah, I'm glad that him living is canon.
No, thank God.
Well, which I'm actually going to sidestep to my other fandom I'm in. I'm a huge fan of Magic the Gathering. I'm so happy Johnny Goldmane is cured from his affliction, but that's a completely different fandom, but I just wanted to throw that out, because if I didn't talk about that, something is wrong with me.
I'm on the Death of the Author side. Canon means nothing.
Yep. Oh, also, this guy has probably the most top-tier character development in all the books that I've read. Oh my gosh, do you want to talk about how amazing his character development is without spoiling anything? Can you do that?
Why do you think I like him so much?
Oh yeah, it's just, the storytelling is so good.
He starts out as an unlikable twit with a lot of tension, and that tension evolves the complexity of the relationship with Legoshi.
Yeah, it's just so good. Also, besides Angry Lewis, Serious Lewis is also best Lewis. Like, there are so many good Lewises, but Angry and Serious are, like, is basically his two modes.
Are any of them fun, though,
Coyer?
That's
It depends. Angry Lewis is so fun, though.
They're fun if you hate yourself.
No self-deprecating up in this stage, please. Oh, yes, just some examples. And we're going to talk about these. Look at that stage.
Like himself. No.
No, he doesn't, but you just gotta love him.
That's his character, though.
Yeah, that is the best way to describe it. And there's, of course, the ghost, hey, Lewis, I know you farted. And, of course, he's He's bad.
We got the prey with the ferocity of a predator, and we've got the predator with the gentleness of prey.
I know. It's just the dichotomy is just so amazing in this series. Ugh! Oh yes, and more memes. He is the one that has the Netflix account. Oh no. Lewis is Legoshi is the one with the password. Everybody mooches off of him because he's got the big dumb.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's too much of a pushover.
Now about that anime, I'm gonna let you talk about it. Oh yes. Sorry, I don't think you have the big dumb in real life, but you do have the big dumb. I'm sorry. I know, but we love him for it.
I have the biggest though.
So I've got feelings now. This slide I'm gonna set aside because since we approached Beastars in a completely different way, I came from the manga, while this boy came from the anime. It's a very different way you appreciate it based on the medium you start with. Because when things go from paper to the big screen, things have got to get cut, things have got to get changed, sometimes they add some flavor in, and it's just a very different experience. So I'm just going to start as a manga snob and who love the written work. I'm not the biggest fan of the anime, I appreciate it, but from how much the manga has influenced me and how much I loved it, because I would read this thing from chapter to chapter. Like, when the English translation came in, I jetted to that. Like, I went straight for it. It just feels different seeing it on the big screen, but I still appreciate it for what it is, and I can respect it. But that's not how I started, and I'm still going to hold it against them that my favorite character was not in season 2 when he was introduced at that time frame. I am not happy about that. So, sorry. I'll end my little fan rant and then move on to one who was introduced with the anime. Oh, 7 minutes, but we're almost done, so we're good.
Yeah. All right, so about the anime is generally quite faithful to the manga, but like we said, it is condensed. Entire chapters are episodes, but seeing these characters come to life, I would argue it's actually worth it. The style is extreme, the fidelity of the style is extreme, and it really keeps the mood of the manga up with what it cuts out. It tends to imply, which implication is part of what it cuts out from the manga, and with that, it remains quite solid. This man is introduced to the manga.
Oh, yeah, believe me.
He's enlightened me, but I don't feel like I've missed anything.
Yes, I do share that sentiment. I just like the manga more because that's where I came from, but I respect it. It is, like, definitely good. And also the animation style for being that 3D is also unique. So either way, even from an animation standpoint, it is making breakthroughs. Because anime doesn't normally do 3D. It's usually just hand-drawn 2D. But this studio, Orange, the guys who made it, they made something special. Everything, no matter what medium it comes to, it is so unique and fresh. I can't think of it. I have no complaints.
Well, that'd be a VR chat model.
Now, so we are wrapping up shortly, but I do want to highlight, if you want to learn more about Beastars, I put here together 3 very influential YouTubers that definitely talk about Beastars. First off, the one who started it all. For me, after I became a fan of it and I read through chapter 98, this guy showed up on the scene, which he is actually here at Freedelphia. But he's not feeling too well. You might actually come across him. Now he goes by Ren the Lion. He actually has a YouTube channel where he has a bunch of character analysis as well as a Beastar and why you should like it. He's one of the people that influenced me to do this panel. Shame that he's not here and he's not feeling well, but definitely check out his guy's work on Beastars. If you want something more funny, then you've got Sonic Ha XD. He's hysterical. He likes Mortal Kombat videos, but when he does a Beastars one, I drop everything and watch it. He is just that funny. And lastly, I'm going to add one of my dear friends on Telegram, CookBoss88. He actually lives in the Philippines, and he does excellent Beastars work. Also, I view him as like the furry version of the Click. Very good work. Very good voice acting. Oh, yeah, my references. So that concludes everything. So how much time do we have left?
4 minutes.
Okay. In 4 minutes, I'm actually going to turn to the floor for the audience that is watching. Have you seen Beastars? Do you like it? Is this your first time you're being exposed to it? Actually, let me go through it a little slowly. Is this your first time learning about Beastars? Wow, you all really like it. So you kind of knew what you were expecting here.
Yeah, of course.
All right, who has seen either, who's seen the anime? Who's seen the, or who's read all the manga or like a good chunk of it?
Who's all? Who's read the manga?
Were you exposed to it by the manga, like this one?
Yeah, did you start with the manga or did you start with the anime? All right, all of you who just raised your hand for the anime, go online and start reading that manga, because you are missing a ton of stuff. Yes?
Is it worth spoiling the anime, the last season of the anime, so we can bottom it out and show it?
No, we are not spoiling anything. I'm actually hoping...
No, I'm asking, should I? Like, if I want to, I know the last season is coming out.
Please spoil the anime with the manga. Please spoil the manga with the anime. What I like about seeing all the anime first and then the manga is I like having more context for my favorite season of the anime.
Oh, yeah, actually, you know what, you're right, because the anime might go a completely different route. We don't know what because the anime's not done, we don't know how it's going to end.
Okay.
So I would say the manga, definitely read the manga. You may think you're spoiling yourself, but who knows, they may do a 180 and do like a, what's that one with all the kids in the garden? Full Metal Alchemist. Not the Brotherhood one, but the other one. That went completely different off the rails from the manga, so that's a good example. So you don't know. So of those that have just seen the anime, who's your favorite character? You can pick somebody.
Yeah, raise your hand if you did Louie as your favorite character.
Who?
Louie. Who else?
Oh, Louie?
Yeah, there we go.
All right, for those that have read the manga, do you know the grandpa of Legoshi? Do you know why I like him? You get what the jokes I was saying about him being the Joseph's Joe star of the Beastars universe? If you think about it, you'll get it. I'm so excited for him in season 3. You have no idea. All right. So somebody said Pina. Yeah, that little insert word here that I can't say because it's not 4 o'clock. I do too, but he's still a little jerk. But he is
Jack
part
is
of...
Jack is a precious boy.
Oh yeah, Jack is so precious.
I feel really
Keep him away from onions, for the love of God. If you don't know that scene, that's okay. I'm not spoiling anything. Just keep him away from onions.
Don't feed your dogs onions, people.
Oh yeah, don't give your dogs onions either. Just, no. Don't do that. Okay, so... I will say Pina is a part of one of my favorite short stories, because there's a ton. Like, it's very hard to beat the power one, but there is a short story with Eboa the Eagle, Pina, and Bill that I absolutely adore. If you read the manga, you know exactly what short I'm referring to. Actually, I think this is time to wrap it up. I hope you all enjoyed this presentation. And definitely, I'm really glad to share my love of Beastars as well as this entire series with all of you. So go, have fun. Go on to the world, and then maybe meet up with me at 6:30. And what room are we in? Panel 2?
Panel 2, yeah.
Yep. Meet with me in panel 2 to go over the art of the furry visual novel. Have a good day, folks. So long, and thank you.